care workers. I support maintaining activist-oriented programming, thus allowing for the coverage of a variety of issues. I will work with other board members to expand outreach for WBAI. Espero contar con todos y todas ustedes. I hope you will support me and the other candidates of the Justice and Unity campaign. Go to www.justiceunity.org or contact me at 212-591-2111.
And it's 3 minutes after 7 o'clock, that special election, the real election, not the one you heard about last night. The WBAI election report is heard periodically here on WBAI in New York. But right now, it's time for Off the Hook. Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you this fine Wednesday evening, the day after Election Day. Joined in the studio this evening by Mike.
Hi.
And Jim.
Hello.
And not Kevin.
Hello.
And Bernie S. down there in Philadelphia.
Where it's pouring rain.
Pouring rain in Philadelphia as well. And Bernie, I believe tonight's a special occasion. You're on a landline tonight, is that right?
Yes, it's one of those rare occasions. I have access to a landline and a headset and a cough button.
Wow, okay, well that's...
I'm going to cough, get ready.
Okay, this is exciting.
There, I just coughed.
Didn't hear a thing.
Pressed the cough button.
How about that? Well, we have cough buttons here too.
Mm-hmm. I know, that's why I mentioned it.
I'm not quite sure I understand the purpose of them, though, because you can hit the button and cough, but all the other microphones will pick you up.
It reminds me of that hernia test I had once.
Yeah. All right, well, enough of this banter. Let's talk about the real issues at hand tonight. The day after Election Day, and a lot of us throughout the country had to deal with different sorts of ballots. Some of us had problems with the ballots, with the machines, that is. And I'm sure we have all sorts of stories. We've invited a lot of listeners via the website and other promotional ways of reaching them to tell us their stories. And we'll be taking your phone calls throughout the next hour, if you can tell us things that you noticed about your particular machine, your particular voting experience. We'd sure like to hear about that. All sorts of stories from around the country concerning problems with the machines, programming errors, inexperience dealing with electronic voting machines, frustrated poll workers in hundreds of precincts early yesterday, delaying voters in Indiana, Ohio, and Florida, and leaving some with little choice but to use paper ballots instead. In Cleveland, voters rolled their eyes as election workers fumbled with new touchscreen machines that they couldn't get to start properly until about 10 minutes after polls opened. We've got five machines. One of them's got to work, said a troubleshooter from the Cuyahoga County, Ohio Elections Board. In Indiana's Marion County, about 175 of 914 precincts turned to paper ballots because poll workers didn't know how to run the machines. According to an official there, it could take most of the day to fix all the machine-related issues. Election officials in Delaware County, Indiana, extended voting hours because voters initially couldn't cast ballots in 75 precincts. The county clerk said the cards that activate the push-button machines were programmed incorrectly, but the problems were fixed by late morning. Pennsylvania's Lebanon County also extended polling hours because a programming error forced some voters to cast paper ballots. A third of Americans are now using these kinds of machines, and you know, I just have to wonder why. What is the advantage really to this? I mean, yeah, computers can count faster, I suppose, but was it ever really that much of a problem in the past? Were we having trouble counting?
Well, you know, the American educational system needs some work.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know, but still, I think numbers should stay in the curriculum, and we should learn how to. But it wasn't people with calculators or pens and pencils adding it up. We had a mechanized way of counting the mechanical ballots. It didn't seem to take very long, and it seemed to be rather accurate. But now there are all these questions. Is it really being counted properly? Is there some kind of program inside the system or inside the card someplace? And is my vote really going to be counted?
Well, you're asking all these questions about the electronic machines.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't mean to offend them.
And they're good questions that should be asked, but no one ever asked them about these big mechanical machines, which have problems of their own. They break, they get jammed. Mm-hmm. Who knows what if the lever that I pull actually makes the vote that I want happen, you know?
It's a simple concept. I mean, basically, you're pressing something. There is no, I don't think there's any electrical power required for this.
No, there is.
Is there? Okay. Yeah. That explains, cause I voted, this is the only kind of machine I've ever actually touched or seen, is the big mechanical ones with the red levers that make the little sound, the big sound, actually. And there was a power cord going to the bottom of the machine. It was a big section at the bottom. I guess that's where the ballots drop down or something.
No, there's no ballots.
Well, something has to drop down or no. Be punched or no.
The way that these machines work, these are the ones in New York City. I think there's a slightly different model in the rest of New York State that I've never seen. But it's basically a sort of like an odometer on mm-hmm. a car, and there's windows that are covered up. During the day, and at the end of the day, they unlock the windows and they can see the odometer having gone up by one for each vote.
Okay.
If it works, but not all the time.
I'd like to know then what's that big section at the bottom that's all sealed up that has a power cord running to it. Now, there's a power cord that runs to the top, which is where a fluorescent light is, and that's supposed to obviously allow you to see what you're doing. But
there's also lights that light up. When you're allowed to vote, like when the machine is activated, it lights up, and then when you're done voting, it unlights
Not ours.
You don't have that too?
We had bells. We had a bell, but we didn't have a light.
You see, there's slightly different technologies.
At the machine I was at in New York City, three lights, a white light for when the next voter should head for the booth, and two other lights, which every time I've voted for the last 30 years, I've never seen on, but one is red and one is green. What they delineate, I don't know.
Well, this is a pretty thick power cord. I don't think that's really needed for that.
I would think that the machine is not mechanical, it's electromechanical. In other words, it, as Mike described, yes, it is a more or less comparable to an odometer. Wheels turn, numbers turn to count the vote. But with all the many voting spaces on the machine, mm-hmm. to do it manually by just throwing that large red lever at the base of the machine over, it's about, 4 feet long, you would say, overall, or something like that? You could not turn everything and have the mechanical power of that run all the numbers, all the counters. You need to boost it with electrical power.
Really? I didn't feel like I was getting any help whatsoever. I felt like I was doing all the work myself and I'm pulling that big lever.
Right, you're pulling the big lever, but it's boosting it when it goes to the odometer feature.
Yes, Bernie?
Maybe this is analogous to a mechanical telephone switch, like a Strauger switch, where there's, when you pull a lever, it moves something so many ticks and over. Anyhow, what these old mechanical machines are akin to are mechanical computers. They tabulate increments and show them on a counter. It's a big adding machine, big electronic adding machine. Why there was an electrical one at your place, I don't know. But all the ones I remember voting with several years ago were purely mechanical with no power cords running to them, and it was all human-powered. You pushed the levers and pulled a big crank, and it made a big satisfying crunch. And then
that's exactly the kind that I used, except this time I paid special attention and looked for things like power cords, and I found two of them. If you had asked me a year ago, I would have said no, there's no power cords going to these things, but there were, and there has to be one at least to light up above your head so you can see what you're voting for.
Maybe it was bugged.
Maybe.
Now, these machines have at least the ones in New York City and state have always had well, not always, but for a long time had electricity to do something.
Something, yeah. So, now, these are the electromechanical ones or the pure mechanical ones that we're talking about. We're not even talking about the electronic ones yet. There's mystery in all of these, as Mike said. I don't know. How do you avoid that?
I mean, this situation we've said, the solution we've proposed on the air for many, many years is that paper ballots don't seem to have any of these problems, and I still don't understand why we can't use them.
Mm-hmm. I did.
Yeah, okay, now, Bernie, you had an adventure, I believe, but... all right, why don't we get into your adventure first?
Well, yesterday I went to the same polling place I've gone to vote for the past 9 or 10 years. And once again, like they did 2 years ago, they couldn't find my name on the rolls, and they wouldn't let me vote by machine. Last year they called the Board of Elections, and they figured out that my address was missed.
Bernie, can I just step in here for a second? I don't know what kind of headpiece you're using.
How's it now? It
sounds much better, but okay. you sounded really far away for a little while.
I was drifting away from my head.
Okay, don't do that.
I won't do that anymore. Well, last time I voted, 2 years ago, they figured out my address had been changed by a state computer by mistake when my Department of Motor Vehicle address was cross-referenced with the voting records in Philadelphia. And my DMV records go to a P.O. box, and so they changed my address to the P.O. box where it's not big enough for me to live in. So anyhow, they changed my address back and let me vote by machine 2 years ago, but this time they would not let me vote by machine. They said, I got to straighten it out with the voter registration. So they gave me a provisional ballot, this great big broad sheet of paper about the size of a New York Times unfolded, and it was great. It was this big white sheet of paper, and I had a pen, and I just marked off all the things I wanted to vote on, and including there were some referenda to vote on. It was just very satisfying. They all look over this whole thing and hold it. It was very tangible, and I checked it off and folded it up. And the way they have it is they fold it and put it in a secrecy envelope, this green secrecy envelope. And then you put the secrecy envelope inside another envelope that has your name and address and some special number on it.
Well, so much for the secret. They could easily find out what you voted for.
Well, apparently what they do is when the provisional ballots get to whoever counts them, they first determine whether the provisional voter is qualified to vote by the information on the outside of the outer envelope. Once that has been determined, if you're allowed to vote, then they take the secret envelope out of the non-secret envelope, put them in another pile, and then those votes are tabulated.
Question, just out of curiosity here. Now, when you filled out this information, could you have put anybody's name on that envelope?
Yes, I didn't have to show anything.
So you could have basically voted for somebody else provisionally, and then they would have had to have counted that vote, and there's no way to verify after the envelope has been submitted, right?
Well, no, they do verify the information on the outer...
No, they verify the information. They don't verify that person filled out that information.
Oh, right. They just verify that the person whose name is on there and their address is legit.
Jim, you have something?
Yeah, Bernie, don't they make you sign that envelope? Because I had to do that once many years ago.
I had to sign it, and apparently they're going to compare that against the signature that they had on file.
Right.
Okay, well, I would hope so. That's how they...
A blatantly different signature leads them to void the ballot.
Yeah, that's how it works when I go to vote. I have to sign next to my other signature, which I signed sometime in the past, and it has to match, and usually it does.
Right, but in this case, on the ballot, the outer ballot, the outer envelope, I'm sorry, that determines whether your paper ballot will be counted... They check, among other things, the signature. Now, obviously, they can't do the greatest job. It's not CSI. But if you obviously are not that person and do not sign correctly, to some extent, it will be discarded.
I'm just curious what the actual process is. They have all these envelopes. Now, they take an envelope. What, they type in the person's name on the computer or something? Or they look up something in a circular file and find the signature and hold it up next to it? How long does that process take?
When I asked somebody that, they said I got a bunch of blank stares from the polling officials. They said, "Oh, maybe a couple of days." So, but here's what's happened. They hand me a receipt. It was the first time I ever got a receipt for voting. I got a receipt. It says provisional ballot receipt, and there's a 9-digit number. Is it 1, 2, 3, 4? That's a 9-digit number, and there's a URL and a toll-free number I can call or go online. It says at least 7 days after Election Day. The toll-free number is 1-877-VOTES-PA, because I'm in Philadelphia, and the website is www.hava.state.pa.us. And you can check your whether your your ballot was accepted there. I already checked, and it's not acceptable yet because they probably haven't had a time to chance to. It hasn't been 7 days, but I'm going to check this up in a week, and we'll see what happens.
So, okay, you enter your number, your ballot number.
Yeah, nine-digit number.
Nine-digit number into that website, hava.state.pa.us.
Well, unfortunately, the receipt doesn't have the right URL on it.
Really?
I had to explore the website for a few minutes, well, for about 30 seconds, and just go to the main page and then go to the site index, and then I found the page where you have to plug it in. So
what URL did they have?
It was markedly different, but I had to.
Okay.
It took some navigation, but you know, the average person is not. I mean, a senior citizen is not going to, assuming they have a computer with internet.
Well, access, a senior citizen listens to this program is going to get it right. I'll tell you that.
Exactly, but your average person who is not acquainted with newfangled things might be flustered by this.
Well, and they're not in our audience. We have no average people in our audience.
I was
they're going to get this.
Myself.
But here's my question. So okay, you enter all these this nine-digit number. What information gets displayed? Do they tell you how you voted? Do you verify?
Well, I don't know yet because I don't know, but it just says your ballot has not been counted yet.
Mm-hmm. And you can enter all kinds of other numbers too, I would imagine.
Exactly.
Is this a sequential?
I plan to do that. I'll actually give my number out on the air.
Oh, boy. Okay.
I wouldn't do it yet.
No, let's see how badly Bernie's privacy can be compromised by giving out this.
It may give his real name out through the site.
It doesn't give the information back.
Okay, let's see what happens. Go ahead.
5-1-0.
Oh, wait, only 1-5, right?
Yeah.
Start with the number now.
Starts with 5-1-0-2-6-8-9-6-6.
Okay, Bernie, you're fading away again, so I'm going to say it louder for the benefit of our listening audience. 5-1-0-2-6-8-9-6-6. And you go to www.hava.state.pa.us to check into that. I don't know what HAVA stands for. Do you, Mike?
It probably stands for the horribly misnamed Help America Vote Act, which is a bill primarily designed to make it hard for people to vote by requiring IDs and all this other stuff. But that's what it's called.
So, Bernie, technically you're disenfranchised. I mean, you weren't allowed to vote the way you were supposed to be able to vote.
That's right. And the explanation I was given, they called voting voting office, wherever they call for help, and they had the right street name down for me, but instead of its street, they had there's an avenue some far like 10 miles away in Philadelphia that has the same name. It's not a street; it's an avenue with a completely different zip code. And even though I gave them the right street name and zip code when I went in person to register to vote 2 years ago after the last fiasco, somehow they confused it with the avenue, which is nowhere near where I live, and that's what happened. And this time, they wouldn't even let me vote by machine.
Now, could you have gone to that other zip code? Was your name waiting over there?
Apparently. I could have gone there, but it was far away. I would have missed like half a day of work, and I just didn't want to bother with it.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Plus,
well,
it was fun voting with a paper ballot.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it.
Well, we got to learn about this website and this toll-free phone number as well. And again, that phone number is, 877?
Votes PA.
VOTESPA. And, let's see what we learned from that particular experience. Now, has anybody in this room voted on an electronic machine? Nobody. I'm surprised.
We had a listener who wrote in.
We had a few, and we're going to have some people.
Voted with a Diebold machine.
We're going to have some people calling in as well. Let's read Redbird's. He's not here tonight because actually he got sick voting. At least
he claims.
He claims to have gotten sick by voting.
People get.
Well,
I mean,
I know the feeling. I know what it's like to vote and have to. Pretty much hold your mouth to keep from, well, never mind. But
I prefer to think that we four are the only incumbents who were reelected.
I don't even know what that means. Were we running for something? Okay, so basically, let's see what Redbird had to say here. He used an electronic machine because he's over in New Jersey, and I think everybody in New Jersey now uses electronic machines. And you notice nobody from New Jersey has made it to the show tonight. So now, I don't want to sound like a conspiracy nut. I never do. I tend to a lot. But don't you think it's odd that the day after an election where people are forced to use electronic voting machines, that all the people that usually are on this radio show that would basically lend insight into that experience somehow are someplace else instead, perhaps being debriefed? I don't know. I'm not going to say. But I just find it curious.
All right. Then.
You know, let me continue with Redbird's story here. Today, when I approached the poll workers, a woman asked me for my address. I said, I'm a Stevens student. And that's the name of the school over there, Stevens Institute of Technology over in Hoboken.
What does it matter where you're a student?
I don't know. I'm not sure why he said that exactly, and I can't ask him because the chair is empty. Her response was, oh, okay, then just write Castle Point, Stevens as your address. Unlike Ohio, no ID is required. Now, that's what I call verification. I also had to sign my name with a signature that I had to match the original that I had used upon registration 2 years ago adjacent to it, greatly facilitating forgery. And needless to say, they didn't even check it. Yes, Mike.
Where he claims that no ID is required, it's actually the Help America Vote Act requires identification for first-time voters or people who have moved or something else in all states. It's a federal law. They didn't used to have it in New York, but now they do. It's a law I oppose, but it's a federal law.
Well, as far as this not being adequate verification, this is all I've ever had. All I've ever had to do is sign my name next to my other signature.
Well, if you move, they'll ask you for ID.
Really?
In your new place, yeah.
But what about all the people that moved into this place I went to yesterday? They weren't asking anybody for ID. Everybody was just signing their name. They had
none of them had moved.
That's not true. People are moving all the time.
I don't know.
Maybe you don't know that for sure.
Did they ask you for ID, Jim?
No. I haven't moved. With my address, actually.
So, wait, what you're saying is they're just going to ask people who have moved for ID and everybody else just gets to sign their name?
Look, I'm not saying it makes sense.
It doesn't make any sense. All right. Let me continue with Redbird's story here. The voting machines he's referencing someone else's description, but I'm not sure whose description he's referencing. These voting machines are exactly like the one I used in Hoboken, the only difference being a green X, LED X, is displayed instead of a red one. The X's are very faint, and the only other indication that you've selected the correct candidate is the LCD display on the bottom of the machine, which displays the last candidate selected and also allows write-ins. I also tried selecting some of the unused candidate positions, but nothing happened. I looked all over for a make or model and couldn't find one. The electronic voting machines are very anticlimactic. I remember when my dad brought me to the polls with him to vote when I was a kid, and he let me toggle the levers and pulled a huge arm as a loud kerchunk indicated that the mechanical counters had tallied your vote. In fact, there was a guy with his kid in front of me having that exact same experience. Loud kerchunk, kid screams out in terror, and the experience is sealed. Anyway, all I heard today was a faint beep as the X's disappeared. And that was Redbird's voting experience over there in New Jersey. Not Kevin. I don't believe you're registered to vote. Is that?
I'm not.
You're old enough to vote.
I am.
But you can't vote because what? You didn't register?
Didn't register.
For shame.
It's patriotic.
If you had registered, you would have been a first-time voter and had to have shown ID, and you could have referenced this on the show.
I could have. But yeah. I didn't.
Shameful.
So, okay. So what exactly, did you have any voting experience at all?
Not exactly.
All right. Well, what then?
I've heard stories.
You've heard where did you get the story from?
From a very credible source.
Which is?
My mother.
Your mother. Okay, fine. Now that's a credible source. That's totally credible. And what does your mother say concerning voting?
Voter fraud.
Voter fraud.
Yes.
Do you answer all questions in two words or less?
Let's pursue this. So your mother is engaged in voter fraud? Is that
No, she witnessed it.
She witnessed voter
yes.
fraud. All right. And tell us the story in the words of your mother.
Apparently.
Mm-hmm.
Someone in front of her voted twice.
How was that even possible? They just went back in?
Apparently they just went twice. Two ka-chunks.
Wait, wasn't anybody watching?
But you can't.
But you can, because it happened.
You know, that's right. I mean, these machines, you can just walk out and walk in again. If nobody is watching.
Well, no. They're supposed to be watching.
They have to do something to the top of the machine,
exactly,
don't they?
Exactly. The right. top rear of the machine. They have to do something. The poll worker, I have always seen, turns something, and there's a small mechanical noise there.
Jim, what if you have been a poll worker or you know what they do?
Perhaps.
How hard is or, you know, poll workers could be voting 50
but the
times
point
after.
Is, the point is, you would have to leave or have an extreme long reach around for this.
I mean, there are protections to make sure that the number of signatures in the book equals the number of times that the poll worker turns the thing to allow the lever to be pulled.
Uh-huh.
And furthermore,
if
there
you
are,
understood that sentence, you win a prize.
Good. I get a prize later. There are two ka-chunks when you vote legitimately, because when you go in, you turn the lever to the voting position.
Right.
And when you leave with all the levers by the candidates' names down, you turn the lever back. That tallies them and raises the levers back to neutral.
Now, it seems to me, not Kevin, that this would have caused one big commotion. All that noise being, these are the electromechanical ones, right? The ones
yes.
that make the bell and everything like that. Someone pulls that and then goes back in again and the whole thing happens and nobody's around watching, it just seems like somebody would have noticed that besides your mother.
Apparently not. She's a very observant person.
Well, is she going to report this or ask somebody pointed questions?
Probably not.
Well, that's the problem. I mean, you know, that could have been the one vote that got Hillary back into office. Anyway, speaking of various weird campaigns, there's something I'd like to share with people. I heard this. I went up to Canada this week, and I was listening to the radio on the way up, as is something I do occasionally. And I heard a whole bunch of political advertising, but there was one that was just so over the top. And I'm playing this mostly for the benefit of people who don't live in this country, just so they can get an idea of the kind of fear-mongering that has been taking place in various campaigns. This is something that I thought it was a joke. It was that crazy and that unreal. But basically, it's a race that took place on Staten Island, and this is some of the accusations being hurled back and forth. The race is over, so it's too late to vote for or against this person, but just listen to what was said.
This is a special message for Staten Island and Brooklyn residents.
Overseas operator.
Have you scouted the location?
Yes.
Is the package ready?
It is.
Okay, let's begin the move to the...
This wiretap terminated to protect terrorist privacy rights.
This could happen if congressional candidate Steve Harrison gets his way. Harrison wants to close down the federal government's terrorist surveillance program. Harrison would end this vital program that tracks telephone conversations and emails of suspected terrorists who could be plotting new attacks on American soil. A program that has already prevented numerous attacks, including one on the Brooklyn Bridge. It's hard to believe, but during local debates, Harrison said he opposes this program because it violates the constitutional rights of terrorists. Congressional candidate Steve Harrison, putting terrorist rights above the safety of you and your family.
I'm Vito Fasella, and I approve this message.
And by the committee also, Vito, you won. You won with that kind of message. Jim, you're jumping up and down. What do you have to say?
That's my congressman.
That's your congressman. Yes. Why am I not surprised? Bernie, this is shocking, right?
Ominous tones played with the phrase constitutional rights.
Now, I'd like to know what this Harrison guy ever did say, but I really doubt that he said he wants to protect the constitutional rights of terrorists. I don't think that was ever said in those words.
I want to support the constitutional rights of terrorists.
Yeah, but you don't say that when you're running for Congress. Not quite like that anyway.
All right.
I mean,
that's why I never win.
But the fear-mongering, and for people listening in other countries, I played this for a couple already, and it's unbelievable that this is the kind of thing that people bring forth. And that fact that he won, I'm shocked.
I'm amazed the terrorists had no accents.
Yeah.
And then they spoke so clearly about their intentions.
That's true. What sort of connection did they have?
But seriously, if anybody does know exactly what was said, that this other candidate was trying to... cut off wiretaps for suspected terrorists because they wanted to protect their privacy. I'd like to know what the exact wording was. But, wow, people really fell for that. Okay, here's some more listener feedback on voting. This comes from Lynn, actually, who was in our studio last week. The machines in Georgia are Diebold, no model number or version shown. Very plain Jane white case. Three voter verification machines were networked with a cheap 8-port D-Link switch with Cat5 cable and 5 open ports. You see, this is the kind of thing we should be noticing here. The actual voting machines did not appear to be connected with the verification machines or anything else except 120-volt outlet strips. The directions of what to do in case of a ballot error were off to the side and hardly readable. When leaving, the machine said charging 97%, so it must have had an internal battery or UPS. In Georgia, we are given a yellow smart card to put in the machine. This appears to tell the machine which ballot to provide you. They are very serious about retrieving these cards from you, not that I was planning on taking one. It is very easy to read the ballot of the person next to you. The divider is low and the print is very large, even in regular size type mode. And also, this is interesting, Lynn told me this last week, that in Georgia you could vote all of last week. You could actually go to your polling place and vote. So that resulted in a very short wait on election day. Thanks, Lynn, for those observations.
Emmanuel.
Yes.
Someone in Allentown had a frustrating experience with an electronic voting machine.
Okay.
Did you hear about this?
No, tell us, please.
Oh, yeah, I'm reading this from the Philadelphia Inquirer. In Allentown, PA, a man was arrested at a polling site Tuesday after election workers said he smashed an electronic voting machine with a paperweight. police said. Michael Young, 43, of Allentown, will face charges of felony criminal mischief and tampering with voting machines, Assistant Police Chief Ronald Maniscue said.
Well, I guess that is tampering if you smash it with something, isn't it?
Well, he said says that authorities said they did not know the motive for the incident, which happened around 12:30 p.m. at the polling place inside the Good Shepherd home. Quote, he came in here very peaceably and showed his ID. Then he got on the machine and just snapped, volunteer Gladys Hedzolt told the Morning Call of Allentown. It's a newspaper up there.
Well, I can see that happening. People do snap when they come in contact with computers a lot of times.
Witnesses said the man then sat down and waited for police, who arrested him without incident. The machine's touchscreen was damaged, and it was not immediately clear whether the votes recorded on the machine could be retrieved. More than 130 people had already voted at the site by the time of the incident. The machine is valued at more than $5,000, police said. Now, this makes me think that there's a lot of angry, violent people in Allentown, Emmanuel, because about 10 years ago, my jaw got smashed there, too.
Sorry. Well, yeah, juror was not an electronic voting machine, but yeah, I think probably there was a bit more thought going into this than what happened to you.
Well, that was instantaneous. Maybe he just snapped. Maybe in both cases somebody just snapped. Maybe. I don't know. It's just sort of a thing about Allentown. People just get frustrated and snap and violent.
Here's another instance of voting fun from one of our listeners. I went to vote before work today. Luckily, since it was raining and cold and miserable out again, my precinct was inside a Kroger grocery store lobby. That's a first. There wasn't really a big line. The one thing that was interesting is that I actually had to tell the poll worker how a provisional ballot works. The reason was that a woman ahead of me only had a military ID and no driver's license or other form of ID, although it's been pretty confusing here in Ohio about what's acceptable forms of ID. And what isn't. The poll worker told her that she wasn't allowed to vote without an acceptable ID with proof of address on it. I tried to tell her not to leave, but she got frustrated and left. I then told the poll worker that's what provisional ballots are for. Here in Ohio, if you don't have current proof of address, you cast a provisional ballot and sign an affidavit that you are a resident of the address you say you are, and they look into it post facto if there are any problems. And then one of her coworkers looked it up and said, yeah, that's right. That's exactly how it works. And this listener wants to know why, in God's name, the poll workers don't seem to know this.
The ones at my polling place didn't seem to know anything either.
Mm-hmm. But that's how you had to wind up voting in the end.
Yeah, I mean, it took over half an hour from when I went in and they couldn't find me until they finally let me vote on provision ballot. It was half an hour.
Mm-hmm. Now, there was a film that was on last week that we mentioned, and it's called Hacking Democracy. And I believe most of us have seen it. Has anybody in this room not seen it? Jim, you have not seen it.
You've
not
have cable.
Done the homework. No, but the thing is, you don't need cable for this. In fact, everybody who told me to watch it told me how to watch it without using HBO. And in fact, I'm one of the few people that seems to have HBO out there. So I actually watched it on a television set like you're supposed to.
What? But that's cheating.
Yeah, that's cheating. But everybody else is downloading it and getting it on BitTorrent and having it emailed to them.
You can even get this one legally on Google Video.
Yeah,
seems.
Totally. Okay, so this is Bernie, do you happen to see it?
I'm the one person that missed it, apparently.
Okay, that's too
now
bad.
You're the two person.
I think all the people who aren't here tonight are the ones who saw it. But it's an amazing film. I definitely suggest those people interested in electronic voting, electronic voting machines and their insecurities, to look at this. It's a story of Bev Harris of the Black Box Voting Organization. Her story, how she went out to find out just how these machines work, how they're tabulated, what kind of security they have. And the answer is really, there's a big cover-up here. There's no question about it. Diebold keeps all of this information secret. They don't show the source code to anybody. And these memory cards, is that the proper term, what people use?
It's what they called it in the film.
Yeah. Where I guess votes are collected, and then these memory cards are brought to a counting machine and added up. This guy from Finland, this hacker from Finland, was actually able to read the card and find an executable program on that card when Diebold swore there was no such thing. And just having access to that card, which almost anybody could in the Bureau of Elections, any poll worker could have access to this, or people before the elections could have access to these cards. Just having access to that, he was able to insert some code that would simply take votes from one candidate and move them to the other. Now, the numbers would add up. They'd add up to the right number because he's taking from one and adding to another. And right there, he was able to demonstrate to people, without having access to anything else, how somebody could vote for one candidate and have it counted for the other candidate. And it was really scary that it was that easy. And this is something everybody needs to see. It's called Hacking Democracy. It's currently running on HBO, but you can get it on Google Video, probably YouTube, everywhere. And it's something I want answers. I want to know what people have to say about this. You know, I'd like to hear some feedback from other people as well. I don't want to sound like a conspiracy. Do I sound like a conspiracy nut?
Well, regardless of whether or not you sound like a conspiracy nut, there's something fishy about these machines.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's also all kinds of fishy things about the process before the machines, like who gets on the ballot. You know, there's very rarely any candidates worth voting for. But, you know, even if you care between the Democrat and the Republican, you might get the wrong one.
Mm-hmm. I think it's important that we ask questions of everything. And, you know, I ask questions of what's going on around me. I ask questions of the conspiracies that are being brought up around me. As you know, I've asked many questions about this whole 9/11 thing. You know, I finally got to see that Loose Change movie, and I don't get it. I don't understand why everybody is pointing to this and saying, oh, you know, you got to ask questions. Listen to this excerpt and tell me if it's just a little bit too much to believe.
The official explanation is that commercial airliners hit the World Trade Center on the morning of September 11. However, this official explanation does not take into account the numerous unofficial explanations that have since emerged. Why is it that the official explanation has made no attempt to reconcile itself with the unofficial explanations? Maybe it's because of this. The United States government is really Israel. Let's go back in history a little bit. At 8:46 on the morning of September 11th, American Airlines Flight 11 crashes into the North Tower of the World Trade Center. Or does it? Almost 200 years earlier, in 1815, Napoleon would surrender to British forces in France, ending the Hundred Days' War. Coincidence? In 1936 of the same year, nationalist rebels in Spain attempt a coup against the Second Spanish Republic, over 100 years since Napoleon's surrender that year. Yet why does no photo or video footage of Napoleon's surrender exist? Now let's take a look at the alleged airplanes. This is the interior of a standard 757 commercial airliner. Notice how the carpet on the aisle is blue, matching the seats. This is part of the landing gear supposedly found in the wreckage at the Pentagon. Notice that the landing gear does not match the blue carpet, nor is there any carpet at all on the landing gear. Why? Maybe it has something to do with this. In 1962, the United States government was accused of racism. Thomas Daley of Boise, Idaho, was less than 3,000 miles away from the Pentagon on September 11th. However, he states definitively that he saw no plane whatsoever hit the building.
Well, I didn't hear any plane, you know, I don't get out to the East Coast that much. I mostly stick around.
So what really happened on 9/11? Instead of planes smashing into buildings, new evidence has emerged suggesting that the World Trade Center and Pentagon may have been hit by horses.
Okay, you know, I gotta stop it right there because I just don't get it. You know, I don't know what all this fuss is about, but obviously is there a joke I'm not being let in on here? Everyone's on the floor banging their fist on the.
There's no jokes.
All right.
Or a neigh.
Yeah.
Whatever that sound is.
What the heck was that?
That actually was the genius of someone named Will Franken, who I was turned on to in Canada over the weekend. Go to www.willfranken.com and hear that. No disrespect intended to the true conspiracy theorist out there, and please continue asking questions. But don't forget to stop for a break every now and then. Okay. You guys going to be okay? All right. We're going to take phone calls, 212-209-2900.
We may have to have a break for water or something.
That guy, he distributes his material by, and you won't like this, Mike, he distributes it by the P word, the podcast. That's how it gets out there.
So you could just download it, too.
You can just download it. Go to that website, and you'll be able to hear all that stuff. And be sure to mention where you heard it. Okay, last week we had a feature that we weren't able to pursue because we didn't have the dialing permission necessary. This is something that the British authorities are offering for depressed people who are depressed by the clocks going back, right? On October 29th, daylight savings time ended, and that means people get depressed. So you can call a special number and hear cheerful sounds. Is that how it works? But we couldn't call overseas, so we weren't able to do this. Now, thanks to our good friend Beav over at Telefreak, and you helped too, not Kevin.
Yes, I did.
We are able to somehow call a magical number and access this. So I'm going to call that magical number by dialing these little tones here. Where did it go? There it is. And that number is public, but this number is not. If we ever get the tone. Why aren't we getting a tone? We're not getting the authorization request tone.
Is it a local call?
No, it's not.
Oh, you should get asked for a code.
Oh, this is great. Okay, now I have to somehow hang up without hanging up on Bernie. So let's...
Uh-oh.
Yeah, here we go. Okay, they're both on hold now. Which one was Bernie on 6 or on 12?
Bernie's on 12.
He's on 12. Okay, so let's disconnect this one now. Let's get it back. Okay, we're going to call it again. As you hear, all the tones are going across. And we should get another tone now. All right, there it is. Now we enter the secret code, and we should get connected.
Thank you for calling Telefreak. Please enter a voice mailbox number now or press pound for advanced options.
Okay, and we're going to enter a secret code. And see what happens.
Please enter your password followed by the pound key.
Okay, we have a password, a secret password.
Pound key.
Oh, pound key. I'm sorry.
Password incorrect.
Oh.
Please enter your password followed by the pound key.
Okay, fine. I'm going to do it again.
Thank you.
That's the dial tone, and now we're going to dial the number. Leaving off the leading zero. See what happens. Well, that cheers me up. That's the sound of a circuit busy over in England, I think. Boy, that's educational. It's supposed to do more than this, right?
It did when I called.
Now, is there any way to get rid of this without having to go through all that again?
Nope.
Okay. What I'm going to do, not Kevin, is hand this piece of paper to you and hand this piece of paper to you. Unfortunately, Bernie's going to be on hold throughout the duration of this. But basically, you're going to press, I'm going to hang that up, pick up the receiver, press that down. Let me know if you get anywhere else with those instructions. And that's going to keep him busy for a little while. It's also going to tie up our phone line for a bit. But the phone number is 212-209-2900 if people have any voting experiences they'd like to share with us as well. Oh, yes, write down the secret code for him as well. Thank you. Our address, our email address is oth@2600.com. And let's see if we have any more voting stories here. Let's see. That was the supermarket voting story. Mike, you told your story, right?
Which?
Voting story. No, you didn't tell your story.
I had no voting story. Well, I went to vote.
You went to vote. You're going to tell the story while I look for something else.
I'm trying to teach you about how to enter the code. But
okay, well, you know, we don't have
first,
time to...
First, I'll tell this story that I went to the polling place and I gave my name and I signed in the book. And then I went to the big mechanical machine.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no one to vote for, really. But I pulled the levers and pulled the other lever and that was it.
That's a great story, Mike. It's really...
You wanted me to tell it.
Well, I you know, that's...
I have a minor story.
Well, actually, let's let our listeners have some stories now because I just looked at the clock and it's we're running out of time. And we don't have time to figure out this phone system. We can try that again in future weeks. Hopefully that number will still be there. Let's take some phone calls. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah. The problem that I think I have... It's not a problem, but I live in New York.
Okay.
But I live in the Nassau County area, and that they have been sending me a voting card every once in a while. I used to receive my voting card to a residential, but I changed my address to P.O. Box to a motor vehicle. And so many times that they sent me, I never respond. But yesterday, I went to vote, and I presented one of the old card. They said that I'm not on the list. When they look, flip the page over, and the guy said, "Oh, this is." He said that they put me to an inactive listing.
Why were you inactive? Because you didn't respond?
Not because I didn't respond, but I guess I haven't been voting for maybe one or two election.
Mm-hmm.
Then they give me an envelope, and with the paper ballot, enter the same information saying that my vote will be counted, but they will reactivate my cards again or something.
Okay, so you had to file a paper ballot.
Right.
Yeah, you should get something in the mail in the next couple of weeks saying that they did, in fact, count your vote. If you don't, then you can call the County Board of Elections and complain.
And please do that. Make sure you complain, because that's the only way things ever get changed. Thanks for sharing that with us. Let's take another story, hopefully. Good evening. You're on the air. Hello?
Yes, hi. Hello.
Hi. What's on your mind?
I am a poll inspector in Suffolk County, Long Island.
Oh,
New
wow.
York.
Wow. You can answer a lot of questions for us then.
Only some.
Okay.
I'll answer anything, but I'm only so knowledgeable. Anyway, it was interesting. Before 6 o'clock a.m., when the polls opened, they automatically said to us, Representative Board of Elections said, there will be no military ballots, no absentee ballots, or anything will be accepted. The statewide has locked them all up. Now, why they did that or what they've done with them or didn't do them, I don't know anything more than that. But they told me before the polls even opened. Isn't that odd?
I'm not quite familiar with how it all works. Is that something that doesn't happen in every election, that they get those first or something?
They actually come and deliver the vote from, let's say, Soldier John Smith
mm-hmm.
to the polling district where he would have voted. Or absentee ballots get delivered by the Board of Elections to you, and you put it in your suitcase, because each different election district has a suitcase that gets locked with the key mm-hmm. thrown in the suitcase before it's locked and then delivered back to the Board of Elections.
Now, I imagine that you guys work just with the electromechanical machines, correct?
New York State is the last state of all states, the only state to hold out and keep those mechanical machines, yeah.
That's because they want to keep me from playing with an electronic one. I know it.
right.
But my question is that mysterious section on the bottom of these big machines, do you know what's going on in there, what that's all about?
I believe that is a paper roll that actually gets a vote on it.
Okay.
I believe. But again, your associate was right about the odometer system. It is like that.
I noticed something on the side of the machine that said, do not use this after 999 votes have been counted on the public counter.
I believe so, because then it would go back to zero.
Well, that's a pretty big problem if that happens.
You know, like the little odometers we had on our bicycles when we were a kid. Once you get up to that, you're back to zero, and you feel like you don't have any mileage, and you remember all those miles you did.
So these must really be old machines back when there weren't 1,000 people voting.
The people in my district were, the number of registered voters was 567. Out of that, we got about 220-something. You know, it's a shame, because America should come out and vote, every one of them.
I think some of the machines in the city, at least, can go up past 1,000, but I'm not entirely positive.
And I don't know.
I do remember reading that there are 30-some-odd thousand electromechanical voting machines in New York State. So that's enough for 32 million voters, theoretically.
Yeah, but if more than 1,000 people were to vote at one particular machine, and you didn't catch it, would suddenly all those votes not be counted?
No. Election districts, the smallest unit of voting, are reconfigured to keep the numbers under, as far as
I
know.
Okay.
Right. For example, I was in a gymnasium in a small school, a small elementary school.
I was in an auditorium in a small elementary school.
Yeah, and in that gymnasium, there were one, two, three, four election districts. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's one little area. And then you go halfway across town, and there's a whole other voting place, polling place, which has several districts in it, and on. So it's really cut up into small pieces.
Mm-hmm.
They've cut things up into small pieces ever since Attica.
Right. I voted once out of 34th Street, and the polling place in Midtown Manhattan had a good 20 or 30 machines and tables everywhere. And generally, my experience has been each table is a different set of poll workers for a different election district. So, yeah, the 1,000 people or less per district rule seems to be in effect.
Let me just ask you one more general question, and that's do you see anything that would lead you to believe that there is not a very secure system in place for the voting in New York?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of it. The other thing is, I mean, even without the apple and the fig leaf, ever since the apple and the fig leaf, humans have been messing things up, but there's a human element, and, I'm not on the record with this, but I had to deal with somebody who's just not really adept at much of it at all. For example, specifically, two voters, the second-to-last voter of the entire day, and, you know, we were there from 6 o'clock, we were there before 6 o'clock, from 6 to 9 at night, the polls are open. Second-to-last voter, we're ready to open the machine, you know, close it up, open the back, get the numbers, put it on paper, submit it, go home.
Uh-huh.
The guy pressing the button, you have to press a button before the levers work for every voter. You start new by pressing the button. That engages the machine, enables it to have a new vote put in. You walk in, the voter walks in, they take the lever from one side to the other, closes the curtains, they log their vote, and they put the lever back, and that registers the vote into the machine. While the second-to-last voter was in there, I think they're ignorant or whatever it is, you know, and it's quite a realm for people to understand. They're not doing that every day.
Mm-hmm.
They were still in there, and he didn't realize. So while they had their lever pulled the first pull and not the second pull, he pressed the button.
Uh-huh.
And which screwed up their vote, so we had to nullify the vote and then do what's called a custodial vote, whatever that is. We had them do it again and nullify that one vote, and we accounted for that in the paperwork, but that's just one aspect of how the humans screwed it up.
Well, I mean, do you think what Kevin's mother said is possible, that there could be somebody voting twice in a row like she seems to have witnessed?
Yeah.
How would that happen?
The other thing is, if you're registered and on a list, you do not have to show ID, but if it's your first time, your letters are printed in bright red in the book, you do have to show ID.
Okay, but getting back to this this problem of voting twice, you really see that happening?
I think I could go in and say I'm Mary. I can't say I'm Mary Smith. I can go in and say I'm Pete Smith.
But I mean, walking back into the machine after you voted, don't you have to hit something on top of the machine before you can do that?
There is, on this machine, you know, the only one left in the country is in New York State, we do have to press a button each time. So if we see the same individual, they're going to say, oh, you can't do that, you know, go to Florida or Ohio.
But is it really that simple? You just reach up and press a button? Could anybody do that?
They could, actually. It's accessible, except the poll workers are there, you know, trying to keep an eye on it.
Well, they're supposed to be there, but I imagine sometimes somebody can get distracted and wander away or something.
This same poll worker was to push, his only job at the time was to push the button, and he was talking to somebody while the next voter went in and tried to pull the lever. They couldn't. The machine was not enabled yet.
Yeah.
You know, instead of talking, he should have been on point, pushed the button, but, you know, we worked it out. He pushed his button.
All right, listen, we're out of time, but I want to thank you for calling us up. One final question. Do you have to be affiliated with a political party in order to do what you've been doing?
No.
Okay.
No, you don't.
All right, well, then that's something maybe people want to get involved in future years and report back to us. But thanks so much for giving us a call.
Yes, but just quickly, I recommend you're affiliated with Off the Hook and 2600 and BAI.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thanks for calling. And I guess that's just about all the time we have for tonight. If you have voting stories you'd like to share with us, please send us email at oth@2600.com. And we'd love to hear that. We'll read them next week or something and see just what kinds of voting scandals we can uncover. In the meantime, stay free and let us know what you learn. oth@2600.com. Good night.
Off the Hook always has some great music, right, Cat? Hey, you know, you're listening to WBAI New York 99.5. And, you know, how about those elections, huh?